everyone in podcast land, and welcome back to Five Star Pod Splash, the WWE pay-per-view review show from the Front Row Network on NPR Illinois. I'm Jeremy Gechner. Here with me, our fellow wrestling connoisseur, I guess, of the Front Row Network here. You know him, you love him. Mr. John Sivak is back. Say hello, John.
Hello. Excited to be here.
Indeed it is, because we are talking the latest WWE pay-per-view, Survivor Series 2020, one of the big four pay-per-views in the WWE year. If any of you don't know, or if maybe you're new to wrestling, because it's one of the few sports that's actually continued all year long, maybe they shouldn't have, but who knows. This is one of the big four, along with the Royal Rumble, SummerSlam, and WrestleMania. So usually a lot of big storylines are building into these four pay-per-views every year. But Survivor Series truly is a unique one, because it in recent years it's been the brand splits going up against each other. Last year we got a great pay-per-view because we had NXT built into that, so we had like triple threat matches all night long. Unfortunately, NXT was not involved. A lot of people speculate that might be COVID related. Some people also think that might be that their champion literally had to get his metal plates in his jaw after his last title defense. So who knows the exact reason, but it was SmackDown versus Raw again. And I think some really, really fun matchups here that went down. John, before we get into the individual ones, what's your overall view here of Survivor Series 2020?
I don't know. I guess I have a little bit of, some would say, a controversial opinion of Survivor Series, just in that overall, it kind of tends to me to be a pay-per-view that doesn't really mean much.
Mm-hmm.
It's largely inconsequential because it's supposed to be this one time a year where both brands come together. There's no real consequences of the matches or anything like that. So it's kind of a pay-per-view that happens. They talk about the brand supremacy thing for like a week, and then you sort of move on.
Uh-huh.
That's not to say that there weren't some really good matches. There were some great matches, especially that main event.
Ooh, buddy.
Yeah, spectacular. But overall, I mean, Survivor Series is just not really one of my favorite pay-per-views.
Yeah, and I can hear you there, because it's also funny because they want to do this brand versus brand bragging rights thing when literally half of the Raw roster is like brand new from like 2 months ago from the draft. So where's the pride?
Yeah, and I mean, really, like, they kind of do their best, I guess, to make it inconsequential in the fact that throughout the rest of the year, they don't really stick to the brand split that much anyway.
So, yeah, they always have exemptions all over the place. Yeah, I agree with you there.
I will say,
like, last year, though, adding in NXT and making, like, pretty much all of those matches triple threats, at least those were just really, really fun, because those are matchups you will never normally get to see, you know? You got to see Shinsuke and Roderick Strong, you know, mix it up last year. And I think AJ Styles was even in that match, too. Like, you get to see these crazy, crazy matchups, you know, that are just amazing. But, you know, you're right. This year we didn't have NXT, so it was just more bragging rights centric. And you're right. What I also kind of love, though, is that, like, sometimes it means that the picking these matches is very hard, because they literally could go either way, because there's no titles on the line. You know, everybody's just kind of there trying to get some bragging rights. So there's a lot of ways these matches can go. And there were some surprising outputs, I think, yesterday.
Yeah, I think so. I think in our confidence polls, there was a little while where I was pretty sure that I wasn't going to get any points. At least the first few matches I was like completely wrong about. So yeah. I don't know. It is interesting. And I will say that I did miss NXT. I think they added so much to it last year, and just not having them was definitely a noticeable absence. And I get it. It probably was due to COVID, and there's been some stuff that has happened with COVID and NXT. So they're probably just wanting to keep things in-house as much as possible. But it's just, you know, it was sort of a noticeable miss.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you there. I think it would have been because that's something that excites me. Like if you had three brands every year battling it out, then you would never know which one has the upper hand. You know, it makes call-ups from NXT a lot more consequential. You could have some shenanigans where, like, you know, one of the brands like calls up an NXT superstar just to make sure they don't get them on their team. Like there could be a lot of fun you could have with that. And, you know, I was thinking also like a great way to maybe make this consequential is like usually you have one of the mid-card titles on each show, maybe make it so that, like, you know, whichever team wins the most matches that night, they get to like challenge for one of the other show's championships. And, you know, like they have a chance to like bring it over to the show for like a whole half year or something like that. That could be fun.
Right. I will say one thing that I did like is the next night on Raw, they did sort of make it give some kind of consequence in the fact that they're doing this. I don't know if you've seen Raw yet.
Yeah.
They're doing that tournament for the championship, and most of the people involved in it were on Team Raw in Survivor Series, and it sort of was made out to be that was a reward for them,
right?
You know, for them winning at Survivor Series. So that's good. I mean, it's just, I don't know. It's sort of like ends there. And I just sort of wish that, like, there would be more overall, like, consequences one way or the other for all of them.
Yeah.
Just to make it mean more.
Because otherwise it's just an all-star game. It's like the Pro Bowl. It's just you're doing it just because.
Right.
Who wants to watch the Pro Bowl anymore?
Like, well, that happened.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I guess you're right. Rewards for everyone but Braun Strowman. Don't put your hands on Scrap Iron, man. You angry, angry man. Don't you ever do that.
I wonder what the kayfabe behind all that is. Like, why is he gone?
Yeah, that's going to be interesting.
Something that I missed. Yeah.
It's going to be interesting to see how that one plays out there. But we've got a lot of matches to get in here with a lot of craziness. So let's get right into it. The kickoff show, I'll just say this, even though we're celebrating 30 years of The Undertaker here, we're also celebrating apparently 30 years of the Gobbledygooker, who won the 24/7 title from R-Truth technically from Akira Tozawa, who won that from R-Truth in about the span of 5 seconds. But that will enter in later in the match. But the big thing on the kickoff show is the dual brand battle royal. Good amount of people in here. I think about 20 superstars. It was fun to see Murphy come out with Rey Mysterio after they kind of reconciled their differences, beating the crap out of Seth last Friday. But this one, you know, it was just pretty much a typical battle royal, big spots all over the place, people getting eliminated one by one. It came down to the final five, which was Elias, Jeff Hardy, The Miz, Chad Gable, and Dominic Mysterio. Hardy eliminated Elias and then also subsequently got eliminated. I was kind of thinking maybe they would make it those two at the end there because they've got this feud going right now, but they got rid of them easily there, so it turned into The Miz, Gable, and Mysterio. And then this is literally the move they pulled with Lana a couple weeks ago on Raw. You think that The Miz is eliminated. Gable and Mysterio go at it with a really good sequence there. Man, I just still don't know why they don't push Gable more. He's so freaking good in the ring. But Mysterio thinks that he's eliminated Gable to win it, only for The Miz to come out of nowhere, knock Dominic over, and Mr. Money in the Bank wins the Battle Royal and gets nothing for it. So, John, any quick thoughts on the Battle Royal here that stood out to you?
My overall question is, why did The Miz have to win? Like, he's already the Money in the Bank holder.
Are they trying to make him more legit of a legit threat to Randy to Drew or to Roman?
If you're going to make him a legit threat, make it a clean finish. Don't make him hiding until the last person is, till the somebody thinks they're the last person, and then have him throw, you know, Dominic Mysterio over the top rope. You know, have him in the ring fighting it out, being the legit last man standing. I would have much rather this gone to Dominic Miz because it could have really helped Dominic. Mm-hmm. We haven't seen him wrestle in a while. He's sort of just been mixed up in the middle of this whole Seth Rollins feud seemed like it would never end. So, like, why not give Dominic the win here, give him something strong to build off of, you know, with him being so new, you know, that it would have only helped him, where it does absolutely nothing for the Miz. And no one is going to remember this a month from now.
No, absolutely
not. I don't get it.
Yep. Well, one thing that we will remember is the men's Survivor Series elimination match here that kicked off the show proper. Team Raw, AJ Styles, Keith Lee, Braun Strowman, Riddle, don't call him Matt, and Sheamus versus Team SmackDown, Kevin Owens, Jey Uso, King Corbin, Seth Rollins, and Otis, who was, of course, picked by Adam Pearce on the last episode, the go-home episode of SmackDown. This one, you know, they've been building up the whole Team Raw storyline. Why can't they just get along thing for on Raw for a good 3 weeks now. And you know, this one had some good typical spots here at the beginning, but really things started getting going when Seth Rollins tagged himself in. Once Sheamus got in the match, he turned to his corner, said for the greater good, knelt down and promptly invited Sheamus to bro kick the crap out of him, which he did. And Seth was eliminated. All of us think that Seth is probably taking some time off, rightfully so, to go have his child with Becky Lynch, which of course he should. I don't know if this is the exact thing to get him out the door, or if he's got one more segment on SmackDown he's got to do, but this would be an interesting way to get rid of him, I guess. But then it really started getting to go in here. There was a big segment in the middle there with Otis and Keith Lee, where they were just doing a lot of power, like big man muscle stuff there. That was pretty fun. Big collisions, power clashes all over the place. Kevin Owens eventually got in there and just stunned everyone, like 2002 Steve Austin style. It was great. It was fantastic that he's got in there then. But AJ Styles actually eventually hits him with a phenomenal forearm to knock him out of the match. And from there, John, I think both of us could kind of see where this was going. You know, that this was going to turn into a clean sweep here for Team Raw. Riddle did that twisting senton, the Broton, I think he calls it, on King Corbin to get him out there. Otis went on this huge power run with a bunch of suplexes, but eventually Strowman gets him off the top rope and power slams him to get out. So this left Uso versus the five people. And I actually thought this could be like a cool spot for Jey Uso. We could keep building him up here into like main event Uso, like they've been trying to do. And he was kind of clearing the ring out with a big flurry of super kicks here. But once he tried to go for Styles, AJ's new companion, Amos, which... that's an interesting name. We always knew him as Jordan, the bouncer from Raw Underground, but whatever. But because of that, AJ was able to get the, I can't even remember. Oh, no. It was Keith Lee did the blind tag on AJ Styles. And he hit a massive spirit bomb to finish off the clean sweep. So, John, what do you think here of the elimination match here and Team Raw going 5-0 against Team SmackDown?
Overall, I thought it was a good, you know, it was a good match. It was lots of really good spots and really good people going up against each other. But I don't know. I'm probably being too critical, but I don't see why. I don't like that Raw did the clean sweep on this. You can still give Raw the win, but don't completely bury the guys from SmackDown. Because there are some legitimate people on that roster, on that card or that team, and making them lose in a clean sweep to a team that couldn't get its crap together for the entire Survivor Series build.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't, I don't know. It felt a little weird to me.
Yeah, all it took was Braun Strowman just yelling at him, come on, let's do this. That's all you need, guys.
Right, yeah. I mean, I was convinced, this is when I got wrong on my confidence, because I was convinced that with this whole build that it was going to continue to be a mess and they would find a way to end up losing to Team SmackDown. And it was just, I really think that the person who got honestly over the most in this whole situation was Roman Reigns, which I'm sure we'll talk about that backstage segment later. But it was all, it kind of, the whole thing felt like a setup for Roman and Jey to be able to do that later to me.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're not wrong. And yeah, I mean, we could just talk about that right now, because later in the night, Jey Uso is sitting there with his brother Jimmy outside of Roman's door. Roman comes out and, you know, is basically just telling Jey, like, you know, you disappointed me here. You lost and everything. I don't care about the excuses. Jimmy's trying to stick up for his brother. And Roman, I just love it. He's like, you can go. Like, you know, I don't need you here. Jey, you stay here. And literally just went through this diatribe of, like, you know, like, your team didn't win because they didn't respect you. And if they don't respect you, they don't respect me. It's like, actually, you know what? Get the hell out of here. It's like, I am just loving this Roman Reigns. It is fantastic. I felt so bad for Jey, but I knew that what was coming there. But you're right. Just a total undressing there. And if that was the setup, I guess, fine. But you're right. You could have given some of these guys, like Owens or something, at least one elimination. I mean, I am literally dead surprised that Matt Riddle made his way through this whole match without being eliminated.
No, I am too. I generally don't ever see the need for clean sweeps. I just don't think it benefits anybody in a largely inconsequential match that is not going to be talked about or factor into anything months from now. You know, why not bring it down to the last, like, to a 2-on-1 or the last two guys. You know, you get the same result no matter what. One team wins and the other one doesn't, but why make the other team look so inept that they couldn't get a single win against, you know, a team, like I said, that was a complete mess for their entire build-up.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree with you. And I think, I guess, maybe the only thing we could take from that is that because none of them got eliminated, they all have a claim to this, you know, number one contender tournament. But even that's something you have to watch Raw the next day for, you know. So, I mean, we'll see what comes of that. But the next matchup that we were going for here, the Tag Team Champions matchup, the New Day, the Raw's Tag Team Champions versus the Street Profits, the SmackDown Champions. Tons of fun promos involving Big E and these guys throughout the last couple of weeks. And honestly, this was the matchup, aside from the main event, I was most excited about, just because the two styles that these guys go at would just be a wonderful combination. And damn, if we weren't right. The New Day came out with Big E decked out in their Gears of War cosplay because they're now DLCs in that game. And man, that looked fantastic. And then the Street Profits did some great getting hyped stuff in the backstage before they came on out. And this match did not disappoint. It's strange. Like, New Day was kind of working a sort of like heel style a little bit. They were doing a little bit more taunting, but I don't think it was like straight up heel, but more kind of just like, okay, Young Bucks, you know, it's not your time yet. You know, you're going to get it, but this is ours here. But just tons of amazing work in this match. The New Day was really going after Montez Ford's ribs. And actually that kept paying dividends throughout the match. I always love it when they can actually follow through with those. Dawkins got some a hot tag about in the middle, did this big, huge comeback stretch there. You know, Ford was kicking off of Dawkins' body, his sliced bread as a highlight. Kingston and Woods, they did a lot of comeback stuff. They did a midnight hour on Ford for a two count. And what I loved about that was when the commentary said, you know, like, well, wait, that usually is their finishing move. But they're like, yeah, but Big E's usually the one delivering that DDT part, and it doesn't have as much power without him. I love that. That was like, it's logical, and it gives a great sense of why, you know, they have to have some new stuff here. But ultimately, the big parts of this match, Montez Ford gets that huge frog splash, but because they were working his ribs over so much, he sold it really well that it was insanely painful for him to hit it. And, you know, and then like he tried to go for the cover, but it wasn't enough this time. Eventually, though, this turned into a blockbuster off the top rope in the electric chair position to Xavier Woods that got Dawkins the 1-2-3, and the Street Profits end up taking this one. They had a nice show of respect in the middle of the ring to end the match here. John, what do you think of this matchup? This was fantastic stuff.
Oh, I absolutely loved it. Just great action from the best two tag teams in WWE right now. And one of the best tag teams in the history of WWE in the New Day, and a tag team that I think we'll be saying that about in a few years in Street Profits. Two awesome teams that you knew going in they were going to give us a great match, and we got exactly what we were expecting. And you know, I I'm really happy for the Street Profits that they got to get the win in this, that it almost felt like, you know, it wasn't a passing of the torch, but it was definitely almost like a favor from the New Day of the Street Profits to say, we're going to put you over. We're going to further legitimize you and solidify you. You know, the Street Profits have been tag team champions for a long time now, a year at this point. So, you know, that a win like that over the New Day on a pay-per-view is a big deal for them. And I think it really does do a lot for their legacy, you know, not only as champs, but just as overall in the WWE. They're definitely one of the top two tag teams. It's them and the New Day right now, not just because of their champions, but just because of their ring work, of their character work, and just everything that they bring on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, just a ton of great offense here. Go out of your way to find this match if you didn't get to see it. Tons of just great stuff, tons of homages as well. I loved seeing Ford hit the Trouble in Paradise on Kofi after Kofi missed it. Just great little stuff like that. They were working really great together. If this turns into a big rivalry like a little ways down the road, I would be very okay with that, especially if they're going to think about unifying those titles soon. But the next match, well, it happened. The Mid-Card Champions match up here, Bobby Lashley, the U.S. champion from Raw, versus Sami Zayn, the Intercontinental champion from SmackDown. There's not a lot of in-ring work to break down here. It's about as big of a mismatch as you would think. Lashley was working his power over like crazy when he got the chance to. Sami Zayn was doing his thing, his, you know, chicken crap heel stuff. You know, he was running around trying to work the system. But because the Hurt Business was out there with Lashley, that advantage of cheating never really came to fruition. Ultimately, this turned into Zayn tried to get Lashley disqualified because he tripped over MVP on the ramp, which, again, look, I know Sami Zayn is very good at this stuff, but come on, the guy is a great in-ring competitor, too. We don't need to just let him do this. The referee wasn't having it as the ref was talking to Lashley. MVP then does get involved, throws Zayn back in the ring, and as Zayn is arguing with MVP, Lashley puts on the Hurt Lock for the tap out. That's just my biggest complaint here. Look, this match was like 7 minutes. It's longer than I thought it would be, honestly. You know, Sami Zayn is an incredible in-ring performer. We don't need to just keep letting him find ways to, like, avoid fights. You know, he can win fights. Lest you forget that amazing ladder match he won against AJ Styles and Jeff Hardy just, like, about a month ago. So, you know, I think that that's my only real complaint here. But other than that, this is fine. I think this is fine.
Yeah, it happened. It was pretty much what we thought it was going to be, you know. Sami Zayn being the, you know, scared heel, trying to do whatever he can to get out of getting his butt hit by Lashley. And in the end, Lashley catches him and wins.
Yep. Power wins out.
You know? Yeah. It happened. Yeah.
Yeah, so it happened. Thank you very much, everyone. All right, well, let's get into something that was definitely not just happening. The women's championship matchup, Asuka, the Raw women's champion, versus Sasha Banks, the SmackDown women's champion. Man, I mean, this isn't the first matchup these two have ever had, but every single time it is fantastic in-ring work. Sasha Banks has been on another level since she's come back. Asuka is Asuka. I don't know if there's ever been a more consistent great performer in the history of this company. Maybe The Undertaker, maybe Shawn Michaels. I think that's the level that you're talking about with how well Asuka does her job each and every single time out. This one was great, though, because they tried to put on their submission locks very early. Asuka tried to get in the Asuka lock. Sasha Banks tried to get the bank statement very early, and it was a ton of not only hard hitting stuff, you know, like especially like the kind of front facing backstabber that Asuka did on the outside as Sasha dove from the railing, but a lot of counters, a lot of submission counters and twirling counters and pin counters in this, which both of them are just very, very good at. Banks was really working over Asuka's arm, really doing a lot of arm bars and stuff like that. It was ultimately at the end, though, it was a bunch of pin exchanges, and then Banks eventually caught Asuka in a jackknife pin for the 1-2-3 here. So I don't know. Some might say that it wasn't as smooth as you know, the start of the match at the end. Some people might be disappointed it ended with basically a roll up. But I mean, look, this is a match where whichever way you wanted to win this, whoever you wanted to win this, WWE, both were going to be protected because they're both amazing. So, you know, I was okay with this. I think I'm good with Sasha finally getting one on Asuka. And if she's going to in this environment, I think it's probably the best. John, what do you think of this matchup?
Yeah, I loved it. You know, for all the same reasons that you stated. I mean, it's just a really good technical match by two of the best in WWE. And it's kind of what we knew we were going to get. It's, you know, I wouldn't say the best match between those two, but still a really great, great match. And I love the way that they're continuing to put Sasha over and to build her. And she's putting that streak of never being able to successfully defend the title behind her.
Yeah.
It's further legitimizing that win. It's also further legitimizing Bayley's run. You know, Bayley had that title for over a year.
Yeah.
So if Sasha wins it from her, then goes out and loses to whoever, you know, loses it to whoever the next day, then that's gonna kind of delegitimize both of them. So for many reasons, I love this match, and I love the outcome of it. I just keep pushing Sasha to the moon. That's kind of where I'm at.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of great opponents for her to face. I mean, the women's division throughout all of WWE, including NXT, it's the best division in any wrestling promotion on the planet. The amount of women's talent they have in WWE right now, and call up some of those NXT guys or ladies, because man, they're gonna make some very fun matchups.
There's rumors. Oh yeah, there's lots of rumors about Rhea Ripley. Oh man, I would love a Sasha Banks Rhea Ripley match.
Oh man,
those two completely contrasting styles just would be
incredible. Fire. Oh, also, all of this is happening without Becky Lynch or Charlotte Flair. So everyone, just get ready for that to happen again too.
I know. Next year, I can't even imagine how good the women are going to be when they get those two back. It's not even close.
No, it's going to be fantastic. Well, let's keep the women's run going here. The Women's Survivor Series Elimination Match. Team Raw was Nia Jax, Shayna Baszler, the Women's Tag Team Champions, Lacey Evans, Peyton Royce, replacing Dana Brooke and Mandy Rose, and Lana, of course, who's been put through 9 tables by Nia Jax over the last 9 weeks. And that took on Team SmackDown. Bayley, who was chosen by Adam Pearce to round out the team, Natalya, who won her way in on last the go home episode of SmackDown, Bianca Belair, Liv Morgan, and Ruby Riott. You know, this one was a lot more fun with the eliminations than the men's match. Lots of really, really great stuff there. A lot of dominating early. Lana got in the match early, and I thought was actually comporting herself pretty well in the ring. She was looking pretty good, but that was obviously the big story here. You know, she tags back out, and Nia Jax gets so angry at her that she tells her to stand on the ring steps and to not tag in for the rest of the match. Do not move. Do not do anything. So we're going to get to this, but lots of really cool stuff here. But Bayley, I think, was actually the first elimination of this match, and she got eliminated by Peyton Royce. And don't get me wrong here, the new Peyton Royce finisher is fire. It's fantastic. It looks brutal. But God, man, don't do Bayley like that. She's like your standard bearer still, man. But she went out there. Then Natalya eliminated Peyton Royce with a sharpshooter. Lacey Evans also had this wonderful Spanish fly spot on Bianca Belair off the top rope. Man, Lacey Evans is just right there for me. She almost has the whole package there. She's got some amazing athleticism. She's got to kind of work on her presentation, I think. But ultimately, this one ends up with Baszler, Jackson, and Lana still standing on the ring steps versus Bianca Belair, basically, after Riott is choked out to death, apparently, by Shayna Baszler, and then Jax eliminates Liv Morgan. So this is interesting, though, because Bianca is going toe-to-toe with Shayna Baszler. Baszler. But as Baszler locks in the Kirifuda clutch, you know, as Bianca's trying to get to the ropes, she's fading fast. She kind of falls onto the ropes with her arm draped over it. So Shayna is not breaking the hold. And so after the five count, the ref disqualifies her. And so now it's Jax and Lana versus Bianca, but Bianca is like out. And Jax is just really pissed. So she's going to go and put Bianca through the table spot. Bianca throws Jax into the ring steps. Nia really kind of no-sells this then kind of knocks Bianca into the railing on the outside. But as they're doing this, the ref has reached a count of 10. Both are counted out. And Lana, still standing on the ring steps, is your sole survivor. Team Raw wins. John, I'll let you talk about this before I say my very big issue I have with this, and it might be the same one that you do, but what do you think of this match and how it ended?
This match to me is the tale of people who are being so wrongly used.
Mm-hmm.
It's just ridiculous. Just, where do I even start? So let's start with the Shayna and Bianca thing. I hated it. Hated that disqualification.
Yeah.
Because it's dumb. They'd already counted out Bianca. Shayna Baszler has been a professional wrestler for years. She realistically would understand that when the ref starts counting to disqualify you, you let go. So it's the dumbest spot.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those situations where it's the WWE treating us all like we're idiots.
Well, they're trying to protect Bianca, but you don't need to, like, they're trying to protect Shayna and Bianca at the same time. It's like, you can't do it in a match like this. One of them has to lose.
Yeah, and they didn't really protect either one of them. They made Shayna look like an idiot.
Yeah.
And Bianca, just who's supposed to be this tough as nails person, who, you know, they just did all these vignettes for a month ago. Now just got, like, completely choked out.
Well, and also they had it building. They had it building because Corey Graves on commentary was doing this great little build-up, you know, like the strongest, the fastest. Like, he was building it right to that spot. All you had to do was find a way for her to, like, roll up Shayna in the pin. It's not like Shayna hasn't been beaten that way before. And, you know, Ruby Riott almost did it. But you're right, like, even if you have Bianca beat Shayna clean, Bianca doesn't have a belt. Shayna still has a belt on her. That means she's still legit. She's still protected.
Exactly. It's just, I don't know. The whole thing was ridiculous. And then not like 2 minutes later, you know, Bianca is like conscious again and fighting and like trying to get back in the ring. And it's just like, what is this?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. The whole thing was a complete mess. And the way it ended was dumb. Everyone saw that coming a mile away as soon as they made Lana stand on the
list. Yeah.
Like, okay, Lana's like, they're going to find a way for everyone else to be eliminated. And then Lana wins by default.
Yeah.
It's just, why? Like, what does that do for anyone?
No, and that's my biggest issue is, like, you've spent literally like a month and a half now building up Lana as this sympathetic babyface that is disrespected but still has, like, talent in the ring because, you know, she's a WWE superstar. So, you know, but you're spending all this time of, like, literally she's not good enough, she's not good enough, she's not good enough. Why would you not let her get a pin? Why would you not let her earn the win? And you have it set up perfectly. You can still protect and push. Like I said, Baszler and Jax still have belts on them. If they get pinned or if they submit in this, there's nothing that's damaged about them. They are still the top dogs of one of the entire women's division because they still have the straps on them. Okay? So if you want to push Bianca, a great way to do that is to have her take out both of the tag women's champions. That literally establishes her a ton. But then that takes so much out of her that it opens the door for Lana, who isn't believable to beat Bianca on her own. But after Bianca's had to go through Jax and Baszler, then it's very believable for Lana to get that. And you could even then still protect Bianca having her get more offense in on Lana, but it's just not enough. It's so easy to book it this way, but now you just have Lana there looking like a chump, like she has been for the last 9 weeks.
Yeah. Or if you really want a good blow off to the whole thing, like a good climax to the whole Lana, Nia, Shayna thing, have Lana pin one of them. Have Lana pin Nia. Like somehow Nia gets like knocked back. She's off, you know, she gets knocked silly some way and Lana rolls her up for a pin somehow.
Yeah.
You know, Lana just got her revenge. Or I guess, never mind, because they're on the same team. I don't know.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you're right. But, like, it's not like last year Roman Reigns like helped eliminate King Corbin on his team. So I mean, like, it's not like it hasn't been done before. You know, like people on the same team like screwing each other over.
Yeah, right. Have Lana somehow get them eliminated so that she's down to the last person, and then like you said, she ends up rolling up Bianca or somebody like that. You know, who maybe could have had some strong wins. And also going back to the way, like you said, the way they did Bayley, this made me mad. As a fan of Bayley's, I was not happy that she was the first one eliminated, and she was eliminated by someone who has barely done anything over the last, you know, since they have done one of the most criminal things that I think WWE has done in years in breaking up the Iconics.
Right.
Like, then Peyton Royce is barely seen, and then she beats Bayley clean for what?
Yeah.
Like, why do that? Bayley is just coming off of over a year long title reign. She is probably with the exception of Roman, I would say that she is the top star on that SmackDown roster.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just beaten clean by Peyton Royce. You know, what does that do for anybody?
You're right.
At least make it like a Nia Jax or somebody like that who could credibly be seen to beat Bayley.
Yeah. You know, no, I hear you there. I hear you there because it's like, yeah, because it's like they came into this match wanting to protect all the wrong people. You know, like you don't need to protect Shayna and Nia.
Yeah.
You really don't, especially in a match like this. I mean, God, you had Owens eat a phenomenal forearm, and that, like, right, it would take a lot more than that to keep him down. Especially as that, like, the first move, like, gotten on him. So
yeah,
whatever. But let's get into something truly amazing. My A-plus match of the night here. World Championship matchup. Roman Reigns, the Universal Champion on SmackDown, versus Drew McIntyre, the now two-time WWE Champion from Monday Night Raw. I love the way they built to this. The promo on SmackDown, the signing ceremony, just anybody wondering how to do promos in professional wrestling, Roman Reigns and Drew put on a freaking clinic on SmackDown. It was amazing. Roman just literally dressing Drew down the whole time. He's just like doing it so cocky. Whatever Reigns has tapped into here, whoever he is listening to, whoever is writing with him, leave him the hell alone, because it is fabulous every single week. But this one, obviously, this big match feel, power versus power, both of them really feeling each other out at the beginning. But, you know, this turned into pretty much some great spots back and forth, but each of them were hitting their big stuff. You know, Drew had this awesome sequence of hitting over the head, belly to belly suplexes. Roman, really, you got the sense, was being a little too cocky at the start of this match, which of course he is. Of course he's too cocky. And, like, you know, Drew was really kind of like playing the mind games with him. But, you know, like, there's too many spots to even, like, remember here. I remember the Future Shock DDT that he got, where I thought Drew, that was probably 2.9 on that three count there. That ref's hand was almost down. Roman sold that really, really well there. But one of the coolest spots for me was Reigns tried to hit the spear on McIntyre, and he rolled him into a Kimura lock, which was something I've never seen Drew do before, and it looked clean as hell. It was fantastic. Roman was selling it so great. Eventually, though, it kind of spilled onto the outside. Reigns hit two big Samoan drops on Drew on the table. The second one actually sent him through the table, and then a brutal-looking spear through the barricade on behind the table. He rolls him into the ring thinking that's it, and Drew still kicks out of it. And again, the look, like Roman's slowly realizing, like, geez, I don't know what to do to put this guy away, was just really, really great. It really built Drew up. Another spear didn't even put him down. And eventually Drew kind of countered into the Claymore, and that Claymore sent Reigns flying off and hit the ref and got him out of the ring. Uso runs down to do a little bit of interference. Drew knocks him off the apron, but this opens the door for Reigns to hit a devastating looking low blow on Drew. Uso comes back in the ring, hits a super kick on Drew right after that, and then Reigns puts on the guillotine chokehold as a new ref is walking down. And I love that they still did this little thing, though, is that even when the ref got down there, Drew still powered up to his feet to try and break the lock, and then it was just too much. Drew never does submit. He passes out from the choke lock. So I guess it's a TKO for Roman Reigns, the Universal Champion there. After the match, he goes up to the ramp with Jey Uso and shares an embrace with him. So it appears Jey is now back in the good graces of Roman Reigns. John, this match is so fantastic. Anything I missed there that you want to call out? What did you think of this big main event matchup?
It was just absolutely incredible. Just all of the psychology going into it, the, you know, the promo that Roman, or the contract signing on SmackDown the Friday before, is setting up all, you know, everything going into it, and just this solidified Roman and Drew as the top two stars in the WWE right now. I mean, it just, there's nobody that does it as good as them. There's, and I think, I guess you could say part of that is there's nobody who's given the opportunity to do it as well as them. Mm-hmm. But my God, just everything about this match was just incredible. And them, they just work so well together. It just, it makes you, I want to see it again. I don't know how we're going to be able to, but like, I really want to see it again, just because it was so good this time. And I think with even more time to build to it, and more time for them to really work it out, I think it could be even better than what we saw, this time. A plus, like one of the best, probably one of the best, if not the best match of the COVID era. Anywhere.
I agree with you. They really turned up the crowd noise as well, which kudos to WWE, because they are really doing that well now. They are really knowing how to add in the fan chants and pumping up the crowd, the artificial crowd noise. It really does kind of feel like it did before, at least in that regard. But you're right. Like, I was worried that like they were going to not protect Drew how they should have, but they absolutely did. The way that he loses is absolutely understandable, even for somebody as strong as Drew is. And what I love as well is that they didn't lessen the Claymore in this. They didn't have Roman like kick out of a clean Claymore and stuff like that, like Brock did at WrestleMania. You know, it took him like getting, you know, the referee had to be knocked out of the ring to do that. So I'm glad that they protected Drew's finish. And yeah, I mean, Roman still makes the most sense to win this. He always did. You know, he's still the top dog. Drew, as much as he's been on fire this past year, and as I don't think anybody could have lived up to the challenge of being the champion in this day and age as well as Drew has. He's been phenomenal. And, you know, if he's not around for the next 10 years in the championship scene, I'm going to be very pissed off. But yeah, I mean, this match was just so great. They protected him exactly how they needed to. And if this turns into a big, big rivalry for a couple years, I'm thinking this could literally, the way these two worked in the ring, this could be the next Rock Austin feud. It could be that good. It really could be that good.
Yeah. Oh, I definitely agree with how strong those two are being booked and how well they're doing with what they're presented with right now. It just, Could you imagine that match in front of fans, in front of a live crowd?
It'd be nuts. Especially the heat that Roman has now. Oh, man. It would be so delicious.
Yes. People would be freaking out, and rightfully so. It just was just so good. And like you said, like I want to see more. I want to see this kid. I want to see them get a long-term. They're on different brands now. I'm not sure how we do it. But, I mean, I would not mind seeing someone on Raw win the belt off of Drew. Drew find a way to get traded over to SmackDown. Whatever you got to do. And just put them in a feud and let Drew be the one to take the title off of Roman.
Oh, yeah. I would be down for that.
I think, like, judging from that match, he's the only one that I could legitimately see beating Roman for that title.
Actually, yeah, very good point. Like, very, very good point. Like, they've literally set him up as, like, probably the only legitimate real threat to Roman right now. And that's good that they're still separated by this brand split chasm. So they could really, if they take their time with this, this could be something all-time special here. And speaking of all-time special, the show ended with The Undertaker's final farewell. So by all rights and privileges here, it seems like The Undertaker really is done now. You know, they've done a ton of documentaries. They've put together a ton of video packages. It seems like he was very happy with his final match at WrestleMania this year, the Boneyard match with AJ Styles. And speaking of someone watching it, it was a fantastic match. So I would be happy if that was my final one too. There was this very strange thing where they had a bunch of legends come out there to say their piece, but never actually did. We had Shane McMahon, The Big Show, JBL, Jeff Hardy, Mick Foley, The Godfather, The Godwin, Savio Vega, Rikishi, Kevin Nash, Booker T, Shawn Michaels, Ric Flair, Triple H, and Kane, who strangely showed up in his ring gear while nobody else did. Glenn's a mayor now, man. He wears suits for a living. You couldn't let him wear a suit. But that turned into a big video package about The Undertaker and his history. And then when we came back, they were all gone. And Vince McMahon was standing in the ring. Talking about some words about the Phenom, and then of course the dead man himself emerges, does a very typical slow but very cool looking entrance, gets in the ring, talks about, pretty much says just a really simple thing. It's just like, look, I've laid a lot of people to rest, now it's time for me to rest in peace. And he does his kneel down, hand up gesture, and a hologram of Paul Bearer comes on into the ring. A lot of people think this was pretty cheesy. I found it kind of touching because, you know, losing Paul was really kind of bad the last year. And I think that it was an appropriate thing to bring Paul into this final goodbye in some way there. And I think they did it pretty well. But the final bells were tolling. The Undertaker did his customary throat slash. And then up at the top of the ramp, one final fist in the air goodbye to the fans. John, real quick, any thoughts on The Undertaker's final farewell here?
The only thing that could have made it better is if there was a live audience. I think they did everything they could do to make it as special as possible in the situation under the current circumstances. It was the right time to do it, being the exact 30-year anniversary of his debut. Just absolutely fitting tribute to him. I agree that the guys coming out and then just sort of randomly, like, not being there when the video match was done was very weird.
Vince just ate him or something.
Yeah. I don't even... who knows? It happened. But like, other than that, like, I really loved everything about it. I'm sad to know that The Undertaker is gone, but they did everything that they could possibly do within the situation.
Yeah,
I loved it.
Yeah, it was a really, really good final tribute there. So, all right, that closes the book on Survivor Series 2020. Thank you for listening to Five Star Pod Splash here. We will be back with NXT War Games coming up here on December 6th. That should be a really, really fun night. Always love the War Game matchups. Looking like the Undisputed Era is taking on the Kings of NXT. That's going to be really, really fun. And I think we're getting a women's War Game match too. That'd be really, really fun too.
Yeah.
So I think that it's going to be a really, really good night there. But we will be back for that one December 6th. Watch NXT War Games on the WWE Network, and then we will be back sometime in the next coming days to give you our full review. And of course, WWE will be back on pay-per-view with Tables, Ladders, and Chairs. Of course, the customary December pay-per-view there leading up into the Royal Rumble. I wonder if Nia Jax and Lana are going to have a table match. I just wonder.
Well, there's a rumor going around. Have you heard this rumor?
I don't know. What is it?
It's being discussed that they want to put the tag titles on Lana and Asuka.
I would be down for that, as keeping that Asuka keeps her women's title, though. So that'd be pretty fun. Yeah, I could see that.
It would be interesting. Yeah. I mean, it would be great for Lana, you know.
Yeah, they would. And honestly, there's a great documentary they did on the WWE Network about her recently that is just fantastic. It really gives you a deeper appreciation of what she's been through. CJ is her real name. So, I mean, that it's a really, really great documentary. So go and check that out. So, all right, that's going to do it for Five Star Pod Splash. Again, find us in a couple of weeks here talking about War Games NXT. And then, of course, a couple of weeks after that for TLC. But for Five Star Pod Splash, the Front Row Network, I'm Jeremy Gechner.
I'm John Stevens.
And we will see you in the front row. Bye.
Five Star Pod Splash is a special presentation of the Front Row Network of Shows, a proud Community Voices member of National Public Radio, Illinois. For more information from the Front Row Network, go to thefrontrownetwork.com or nprillinois.org/program/frontrownetwork. You can also find us on social media by searching for the Front Row Network on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, and find us on Twitter @FrontRowReviews with a Z.